Hello, 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 and welcome to Buzz Bingeing. My name is Natalie.
And I'm Christy, her mom.
And we are going to be covering Queen Charlotte of Bridgerton Stories, Episode 2, Honeymoon Bliss.
Honeymoon Bliss?
There was no question mark, so I didn't say it like that. But, yes.
Yes. All right, so we have our usual caveats and disclaimers and all the usual things. We are going to have cursing. I don't know that they're going to be spoilers. There might be predictions or something about Bridgerton Season 3. We are having things to drink. What are you having to drink?
I'm having lemon ginger tea.
Ginger tea. Well, I am having something that could be arguably tea. From the Regency cocktail book, I am having something called Burning Questions. And I felt like this was appropriate because there are burning questions in this episode. It calls for, and I did not do proportions. I kind of made this up as I went because I didn't have some of the things. This book, fair warning, calls for a lot of syrups. I don't have a lot of syrups. So I kind of fudged. So it calls for 3 ounces of strongly brewed black tea. I made a regular sized cup of Earl Grey. It calls for 2 ounces of Genever, which is a Dutch gin that is heavy on the juniper. I used a little bit of Hendrick's gin. It calls for 1/2 ounce of cinnamon syrup, which I didn't have, so I just put some cinnamon in it. It calls for 1 bar spoon of fresh ginger syrup. Instead of these syrups, I used a bunch of honey, some ginger liqueur, and it also calls for lemon juice, which I'm not using at all. But what I made, though it has very shadowy resemblance to this cocktail, is super tasty, and I like it. What are you having to drink?
I already said it's lemon ginger tea.
Well, lemon ginger tea is good.
Yes.
And ginger, hey, we both have ginger things going on. Awesome.
That's true. All right. So Let's get into the sections. Basically, we're just doing past and present.
Yes.
There might be a little bit. We should just do past in chronological order and then present in chronological order so that we can just keep things straight. So, sure. Yeah. That's what we're going to do, unless things get really like divergent from each other. That's the way we're going to do it. All right, so let's go ahead and do the present section. We get a couple flashes of things like Violet hanging out with her grandchildren and Agatha visiting her former home. Charlotte is trying to get her son, she's meeting with her sons and is basically trying to get them, make them good matches. And Lady Whistledown talks about her lack of patience and all that kind of stuff. And she basically, like, one of the guys comes up to her, one of the sons comes up to her and it's like, I love this woman. She's like, she's an actress. No. And so it's just complicated because they are, quote, in love with these people, but they aren't eligible and all that stuff, but they're not really fighting for it at all. So why does it matter?
Right. We get very little backstory other than like, hey, look, you're in line to the throne. You need to get a real viable, honorable person that you are interested in and get married legitimately and have babies. That's what Charlotte wants.
Mm-hmm. And so she goes to Violet and Lady Danbury and they have tea in the orangery. And they're talking about finding matches for her children. She basically is talking to Violet and is just like, you've had 2 marriages in 2 years and you have 7 children. How do you do it? And
that's like, children?
Sorry, Francesca's lost in the woods. Mom, I can't do anything about
that. She's not dead, sorry. Though.
I'm sorry, I forgot. Even though I'm on her book, it doesn't matter. She has 8 children. And she basically says love did a lot of the work for her. What Charlotte's asking is how to get them excited about marriage. And she's like, yeah, love did it basically for those 2 children for the most part, as far as she knows. And so she doesn't really have much advice other than kind of just let them be and let them figure it out on their own. And but Lady Danbury's has the opposite idea of it, marriage just being a duty, a kind of transaction thing, because that's how her marriage was. Whereas Violet had a very nice love match marriage, and it worked out very well for her. So yeah, I don't know.
So it seems like Charlotte's trying to meld those two concepts. And we get to see in this episode, in the past.
Oh, no, before that.
Charlotte, how that works for her.
Yeah, Charlotte basically chooses, all right, well, I'm going to arrange their marriages and they'll worry about love later. That's basically that. And also in the last little bit in the present is that Charlotte still eats alone. Okay, we already knew that. So let's go to the past.
So in the past, and I've got to remind myself exactly where we were, but in the past, we have a whole lot of montages of Charlotte. And I will say this whole TV series uses silence a lot. And some of it uses very, very well. And in like the very first episode, there are no words before the opening credits. In this episode, there is a discussion with the Dowager Princess about, hey, we need some freaking babies. And that is the only words in the opening sequence. Everything else is Charlotte getting up and getting dressed and having no husband, basically, and being alone on her honeymoon.
Yeah, and in this sequence, she's basically getting dressed up to go nowhere, and she doesn't have any engagements in her diary because it's technically her honeymoon. And so she can't see anybody because they're not expecting her to see anybody because they expect that she's with her husband right now.
Making babies.
And so she feels a bit like a doll. And she gets dressed
like for dinner. She changes like one elaborate dress for another elaborate dress. And you see how superficial and stupid this feels for her.
Yeah. I also noticed that at one of the dinners, she's allowed to eat prawns and fish because George isn't there. George doesn't like fish. He is my people. But he's like, yeah, no, we're not going to eat any fish around here. But since George isn't there, it's kind of a nod to, okay, yeah, George isn't here, so you can do whatever you want. But what you want to do is limited to what you can do during your honeymoon period. So this is like her consolation prize. I can eat fish. Great. And so she can't even do anything for herself. Whenever she tries to even like reach for a book, an attendant does it. Whenever she tries to pick an orange, an attendant does it. And so she's like, I can do this myself, but whatever. And so it gets to the point where she's just so lonely and upset that she's like, I'm going to visit Q. I need to figure out what's going on with my husband. And so she goes over there, and Reynolds seems very caught off guard because obviously this wasn't a planned visit.
And he's so very upset, like, oh shit. But she literally abruptly gets up from the table at dinner and is like, fuck it, I'm going.
I'm going to Q, and I'm going to go see my husband. And so she's like directed to the observatory. But I'd also like to mention that as soon as like him, Reynolds, and Brimsley even like communicated in this scene, I was like, they're gonna fuck.
Oh yeah.
I called it
the very first time you see this, you see that connect, that whole chemistry going.
I said it out loud of like, they're gonna fuck, like out loud for the first time we watched it, and you guys were like, yeah, they probably are. And then they're like, would you like to go in for a bit of air, bit of like warmth or
refreshment?
And he's like, yes, that's very kind of you. And then I'm like, yeah, they're gonna fuck. And so they do. And they're basically talking about, hey, what's wrong? Why are they keep staying apart? Because hey, if they were not apart, we could probably be together. They don't really mention that element of it, but it's an undercurrent. And so they're like kind of roughhousing a little bit. They're kind of like, they're taking clothes off and all that stuff. And he's just like, is there something wrong with him? And he's like, and Reynolds is like, you figure out your camp. I'm doing whatever with mine.
Is it wrong with his bits? And okay, George is just fine from an equipment standpoint.
Pretty large too, apparently. apparently. And it's like, yeah, nothing's wrong with his bits. His bits are very large and good, so don't worry about it. And you can tell that kind of makes Brimsley a little bit jealous. But either way, but he knows that George is interested in women, so that's not really an issue. And because he's like, well, what's his type? What is he attracted to? And he's like, I don't know, women.
Nobody really knows because George hasn't, I mean, he's not been allowed to be, although that leaves some questions for me in later aspects of this, but he's not allowed to have a broad knowledge of anybody, really.
Well, we'll talk about it in a scene later, but so basically, they're also talking about how, like, the palace expects them to, Charlotte and George, to conceive. And so they need to consummate the marriage and make it official and all that stuff because the palace is breathing down their necks, and which we'll see a little bit more later on. So yep. Charlotte visits George in the observatory, and it's clear that George has been sleeping there and eating there and basically spending all of his time away from her in there. And so she's like, well, you clearly don't care about me. You seem to like prefer the stars to my company. What did I do wrong? And he's like, you didn't do anything wrong. She's like, no, clearly I did. And so she assumes that he was visiting a brothel, and he's just like, do you even know what a brothel is? And she's like, kind of. It doesn't matter. Like, either way, I would have preferred that to this, because at least I would have known you were doing something. Like, you really just don't care for my company. If it was just a preference thing, that's one thing, but you're just a preference of like women, that's one thing, but you just preferring not to spend any time with me, it's sad. And so he's like, well, I don't understand why you're so upset. You get to do whatever you want. She's like, no, I don't. I'm stuck here in a strange land. You are the only person I actually really know, the only person that I should be interacting with, and here I am alone. I'm like, you need to fight for me, fight for us and all that stuff. And right. He's like, no, go home. And she does.
Right. Right. I think, and her disappointment is ours as well, because you see that he's a smart guy. He is engaging. He talks about his love and his passion for science and, you know, these great terms. And she's thinking, I want you to have that kind of passion for me. I want you to mm-hmm. fight for me. And why aren't you doing it? What is it that I'm missing? And you know, she points out to him, I don't know if it's in this conversation or a later conversation, that she's like, I'm 10 and 7. I'm 17 years old. I'm alone. I know no one other than you. I've got a whole country full of people I don't know. I'm not allowed to associate with their people. I'm not allowed to go anywhere. I'm basically like a prisoner, you know, this is bad. And there is like a fairy tale princess element to this too. Like, she's like locked up in a tower and, you know, she's going to throw her hair over the, yeah, over the side.
I mean, if her weave goes that long, good for her. anyway, so Reynolds and Brimsley are called to St. James's Palace to report to the Dowager Princess. And she's like, so, and they're like very broad, like, just very vague terms, like, they're happy, he seems very content with her, there's a lot of walking and laughing. And yeah. And then she's like, well, how are their relations? And one of them says, have they consummated the marriage? And then another guy says, sexually. It's just so funny to me. I don't know why.
It's like 20 questions from these, like, is this like Mongolian clusterfuck of people? It's just bizarre.
So they're like, yeah, no, they've totally consummated the marriage. And they're kind of looking at each other like, oh shit, they actually need to consummate the marriage soon. And so they're happy. Oh, great. There might be a baby in a fortnight. And they're like, unlikely. But
yeah,
sure.
Good luck with that.
And so then we go over to Lord and Lady Danbury. They're having sex again, unfortunately for Lady Danbury and for us watching. And so she's like right. Back in the bath, just kind of trying to get rid of everything. And apparently the reason why he was so insistent on like kind of taking more claim over her this time, because like sexually and all that stuff, is because he was denied entry to White's, which is what ironically
a club
which is a club for the gentry and the lords and all that stuff. You see it a little bit in Bridgerton, especially season 1, you see it a little bit more. But
yeah, what she says is that, by right, by his title, he should be allowed in, but they won't let him out or they won't serve him. It's essentially like a lot of the segregation that we had in the US, and she's describing
yeah.
things that appear like that.
And there's also a moment later on that we can go ahead and skip to of like he's not allowed to hunt. He's trying to join a hunt and he's not allowed. And so of course he tries to do the whole sex thing again and she's upset. And so she really just wants him to feel secure enough so he can just kind of leave her alone. She also wants some of her own rights as well, but like that it's also
It's
just kind
mostly
of,
like, get him off of me.
yeah, please God, and for all of our sakes. So then we go back over to Brimsley and Reynolds, where they're talking, and Brimsley's like, "You need to get him over here, or at least have like a gesture of goodwill, because she is so alone and she is very upset, and she's just kind of like on autopilot right now. She's just kind of going through the day, and she's very unhappy. You need to make him make her happy, and just do a gesture at least." And so then there's the whole orange picking.
So he what ends up happening is he sends her a gift, which is a puppy, and
A Pomeranian.
it's a Pomeranian puppy. Apparently, it's very rare, and they are kind of interesting dogs. But it is
That's
she
cute.
refers to it as a mutant bunny,
A deformed.
deformed bunny, and she hates it, and she doesn't think it's a real dog because dogs are supposed to be bigger and cooler and all those things, which on some level I
These
agree.
used to German dogs like a pincher, schnauzer, and or schnauzer and that kind of thing. So a Great Dane, like anything other than this tiny yappy.
Yappy pug.
But then she also decides, well, I'm going to meet with my ladies in waiting. And then Mertens is like, you can't meet with all of your ladies in waiting, but you can choose one like discreetly. And so she's like, all
And she's
right, I'm
like,
choosing Lady Danbury.
and Lady Danbury shows up and they have tea and then they need to talk privately and because she's given Lady Danbury permission to speak freely. She's clearly very young and she's not really she's giving more away than she is keeping to herself. And she doesn't know that yet. But Lady Danbury picks up on, you're not having sex, are you? You're not, things are not happening the way they're supposed to. And she asks for drawing paper and she gives like a lengthy description of how things are
Because
supposed to be happening on a wedding night.
not just because, like, yeah, you should have a wedding night and all that stuff that should be happening in a marriage, but also because that kind of jeopardizes her position if they aren't married
Lady
fully.
Danbury's position, yes.
Yes, and so everyone's position really on their side. I hate saying that, but yeah, it's in this show, it's their side. And
With the
so
great experiment. So the great experiment, what they keep referring to as the great experiment is this bestowment, whatever,
desegregation.
of titles on people of color. And so they talk about if the marriage fails, then all of the are you there?
I'm right
Yeah.
here. Your
So
phone just went off.
sorry. So the mayor if the marriage fails, then the whole everything is gonna
Idea comes falls apart.
right. And
So
so Charlotte's response is basically like, well, fine, I can go home then. Awesome. We
well,
haven't
no.
I'm good with that. She's clearly very, very frustrated. And
Yeah,
so
no, what she doesn't know about the Great Experiment, though. She doesn't know that the titles are new. She thought that Lady Danbury was just Lady Danbury forever. So what basically, and Lady Danbury uses that to her advantage later on. But so at this point, Lady Danbury's like, all right, I'm going to teach you what's going on with sex. And so she does some drawings. I thought they were going to be more crude. I'm glad they weren't. And so she
they
shows
have
some
various
drawings.
positions. This is not the Kama Sutra, but still.
No, the various positions she has experienced, not like overall all of the, yeah, it's not the Kama Sutra, but it's, and then she basically says, well, I've never enjoyed it, but maybe if you love the person, maybe you will. And so, and she also mentions that like my head always bangs against the wall whenever I have sex, all that stuff. So it's like, okay, that doesn't sound pleasant, but if it has to be done, fine.
It does not at
So
all.
no. And then we find out Lord Danbury wasn't allowed to join the hunt. And then Charlotte is again alone, and her dog's now named Pom Pom. But also, Lady Danbury mentions that's a rare Pomeranian. It's not just a deformed bunny. It's clearly a gesture of goodwill. He wasn't trying to like spite you in this
Right.
scenario. And he also sent a note that says, "I did never want you to feel alone." He sends that in a note with the Pomeranian. So that's, yeah. This is perfect from like a departure from your company, huh? And so
Yeah.
basically, yeah, Brimsley and Reynolds are talking about how Agatha was there, and so that's gotten back to the palace. So the palace calls for Agatha, and the Dowager Princess talks to her, and it's like, "Hey, you want to be my informant?" And she's Agatha's like, maybe I should get some land. Maybe I should get a little bit more money and an actual position that has power, so
Right.
that I'm actually allowed, they're allowed to do this kind of stuff.
Right. So she, and of course, that shows her intelligence, you know, and like, hey, I've got something you want. I've got information. You need to give me something. And it is great the way she's bargaining. I think one of the things that is interesting and surprising in this exchange, she mentions, my father-in-law was the king of Sierra Leone. That's how the king knows him. It's how we got over here to begin with. We have more money than you. So you
We
need,
don't need your money, we
you
want
don't need
actual respect.
respect, lands, treatment like a peer, you know, because the peerage is a thing.
Treatment in general.
Right. So.
And because, and she is leveraging the fact that Charlotte is unaware of the great experiment, and it can also reflect badly on the palace if the great experiment fails as well. So they all have a stake in this. So she's kind of using that to her advantage, and also her position with Charlotte to provide information for the Dowager Princess. So then we go over to Charlotte, and she goes to dinner and finds George there, and she's like, what are you doing here? And he's
Yeah,
like,
she's
I thought I'd
pissed.
join you for a meal. It's not like I have been gone for weeks. And
Yeah,
so,
she's pissed. She walks out at this dinner. She's like,
and he's like,
stop
where are
it.
you going? And she's like, anywhere that's not here with you. Jesus, get away from me. Why are you acting like this? Everything's fine now. Nothing's okay. You've
Right.
been ignoring me for weeks, like, or however long it's been.
Well,
It,
if you're
regardless of the length, it's been ridiculous how he's been ignoring her and
right, and
like
so.
ushering her away.
Right. So he explains to her that he has been studying the stars. He wants to show it to her. They go back to the observatory at Kew. He shows her, and specifically what he's been studying is the position of Venus, because there's going to be an intersection of planets where you can actually measure the distance. Basically, based on the position of Venus, you'd be able to measure the distance to the sun. And this is very important from a scientific standpoint. And he's like, there's it's only gonna happen once in our lifetimes kind of thing. I've gotta, you know, I feel like I have to do this, or I want to do this, or whatever, because I'm the only person who has this royal telescope, so I gotta do
Well,
it, and that's why.
it's not just that he likes studying astronomy because it reminds him that he's just a small speck in the universe, and it kind of humbles him because he's the way he's been treated his whole life has been like the heir to the throne, and so it's made him selfish, and he feels bad that he took that out on her and felt like he could order her around and all that stuff, and she says, and he apologizes, and she says,
There's
I'm not
kissing.
going to forgive you yet. And then he says something that reminded me of Hercules. Yet is good. Yet is hope. And I was like, if is good.
Well, right. I mean, it's just good. I actually, the whole I'm just a small speck in the universe had that Monty Python song in my head. Like, so yeah,
Yeah, no,
there's a
I know what
lot
you
of
mean.
callbacks to other things in
But
here.
also just the planets aligning was very Herculean for me.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No,
This
that's
is
I
funny.
see that. I see that. It
Either
didn't
way,
occur to me at the time, but I see it. But
either
she's
way, he
like,
wants to start over and try again, and she agrees, and they
and
kiss, and it's really cute.
there's kissing,
And
and then she's like, "So you're coming home to Buckingham House?" And he's like,
he's like,
"I'm
I'm coming home to Buckingham
not
House. And it's just like, all right, this is all it took. Awesome.
coming." Well,
And
right, and
so.
they have to travel separately in separate carriages because, you know, she might be carrying an heir, and she's like, "Well, but that wasn't possible." And he's like, "After tonight, it would be possible.
It will be.
It will be."
And so they finally are going to have their wedding night. They get all like decked up in nightwear. He looks like a pirate. It's great. And so
He's so cute.
And then Reynolds and Rimsley are like, you want some refreshments in my room? He's like, yeah, I'm good with that. And so
everybody's getting it on tonight.
Everyone's getting it on. We don't see theirs, but you see the aftermath. But Charlotte comes in and she's like, I just realized that my maid's put this gown on and it has like 1,000 tiny little silk buttons. And he's like, I'm very good with buttons.
That is a very Bridgerton line. All the guys at Bridgerton are very good with buttons.
Actually, rereading the Bridgerton books, I figured out that it actually was a Bridgerton line. It was in Benedict's story.
All right, so it's in Benedict's story. I know that, oh my God, Hyacinth, and it's in Hyacinth.
I didn't think
Gareth. It's in their story. It is, I think Sir Philip's good with buttons.
Yeah, maybe.
It's like the only thing he's good at, but still.
Anyway, off topic. But she asks him to skip the part where her head hits the wall all the time. And he's like, I can avoid that. And there's a really cute, well, not cute. I mean, like a very sweet and very like, good scene where you see a bit of ass and
yes,
so it was good.
And I would point out the fact that he is as knowledgeable as he is in the bedroom seems kind of contrary. Like, she had asked him before earlier in the episode, she's like, I thought you were at a brothel. He's like, do you even know what a brothel is? She's like, I've heard of brothels, I know what brothels are. And so when they're there, she says something else. He's like, do you know what's supposed to happen on a wedding night? She's like, I've seen pictures, they were drawn for me. It's like, and he's like, okay. But how does he know? I mean, he's pretty knowledgeable
from the book, and also look at him, but from the book. So from the book, basically there are two, as far as I remember, there are only like two big like sex scenes, and they're around this like era. Once you get to the even days, there's only like one big one. But in that big one, they're kind of like playing around with each other and all that stuff. And he remembers when he learned how to like eat someone out. And it was when his uncle set him up with a courtesan to kind of like get him prepared for that kind of thing. So that's basically how he kind of learned, and his uncle was like, yeah, no, if you do this, they'll take you forever. And she's like, all right, let's find out if that's true. And so he does it, and like, he enjoys it, of course, but it's, yeah. Anyway, so courtesans, apparently. So Charlotte wakes up alone, but she's very, very happy. So she's excited. And also the Danburys are moving into an estate with land and cattle and some, and like spots at Eton for their children. And it's great. It's a good package for just
right.
Like,
it's a good package
on Charlotte.
The downside is, of course, Lady Danbury did all the work, and Lord Danbury is telling her, oh, this is because the king now sees me as I am. And she's like, oh, it could be blah, blah. And he cuts her off.
Well, she doesn't take credit for it. He's like, do you know why we got this, my dear? And she's like, no idea. So she doesn't take credit for it. I think she's trying to be humble as boy.
Her often doesn't let her express
her. Stop babbling. Let's go inside. Like, just really. Anyway, I hate Lord Danbury. So then we go back over to Charlotte, who's like, I'm going to get breakfast. We're going to have breakfast together. It's going to be really nice. It's going to be an awesome morning after. No. So she goes. Sorry, this is funny.
And the Dowager Princess is talking to George.
Because she's talked to Lady Danbury and she knows that they haven't done the deed. Or as far as she knows, they haven't done it. And so she's talking to him, and George basically says that he charmed her to make things easier. They have consummated. I've done my duty. And as king, I've had to act contrary to my passions, so that sucks for me. And so I've had to do all this for the crown. So stop telling me what to do constantly. I already know what I need to do. I'm already doing it. I'm doing my duty right now to England. So get off my back. While Charlotte is hearing this, she's thinking, so that was a duty. So you didn't really love me. And so you, that whole thing was just to charm me so that you could consummate the marriage and then just be done with me and throw me away like a used rag. Like, are you kidding?
Yeah. She is pissed. She is super angry.
I don't blame her for being pissed. If I ever heard that, I'd be like, what the fuck, dude?
Right. And a lot of these things don't get discussed because, of course, you know, George, or not for quite some time, because George is not used to having to explain himself to anyone.
Right.
Other than his mother. And so it's very complicated. But that's basically...
No, Reynolds comes in. And George is like, Dr. Brooks is gone, and is Charlotte, and then he's like, oh, she's in the breakfast room, because she, after she heard it, she's like, I'm getting breakfast alone, and also Brimsley overheard it, so that's awkward for Brimsley too, because the thing is, Reynolds and Brimsley, I really like the dynamic they chose for them, because they're on their people's sides.
Yeah.
So much that because they work for them, they've gotten to know them, all that stuff. Right. And they give more. I'll talk about that in a minute. Sorry. Anyway, Reynolds comes in and George collapses and he's like freaking out. And Reynolds is like, hey, do you need the doctor? He initially says no, but then he's like, yeah, no, I do need my doctor. And we'll talk about the doctor in episode 4. But so yeah, it's
right. But what Reynolds says as he leaves is, because he asks about where's Charlotte, and he's like, she'll never know. We'll never tell her.
Like, that's an ability, but yeah, sure.
So we've got secrets and burning questions and things like that. What were your best parts of this episode?
The costumes. They're just great. Brimsley and Reynolds, I really like them. They're actually a really big highlight that I didn't think that they were going to be. Like, as soon, like, I remember when we called him Beardsley and didn't even know his name. Like, I was just like,
yeah,
no, he's not really cool or whatever. But then it's like, oh, I actually really like these characters. I'm actually invested. Shit. So I also just love that they're together. That's fun. And it adds like another fun little element. And again, the dynamic's really cool. The cute puppy and Violet with grandbabies. I wish we saw more.
Yeah, no, I think that there are a lot of really good things in this. I put George generally, because of course this last sequence in context, because I've seen the rest of this, makes a lot more sense, but you do through the episode itself, other than this last sequence, you're kind of like, oh, George is pretty awesome. And I love Lady Danbury being smart, you know, marketing for herself. I love her drawing the pictures for Charlotte. Yeah, hilarious. I love Brimsley in this. I love that there is finally freaking sex in this.
Yeah, I miss those sex scenes, if I'm being honest. In season 2 of Bridgerton, we just barely got any. Like, Benedict got one briefly, and kind of, not even really. He just like was
new right at the end.
Right at the end, we got one with Kate and Anthony, and a little bit of a hint at something with Kate and Anthony at the very, very, very end. But it just, I missed it.
And so it's kind of nice to see that. What were your worst parts?
Lord Danbury sucks. Overhearing misunderstanding. I don't really love that trope of like, oh, I overheard this, and then it's a misunderstanding. Like, you came in at the worst possible time. But to be fair, I will give credit where credit is due. She heard all of what he said. It wasn't like, oh, you missed like a but. I love her or something. It's not like that. He didn't say all of what he said is what he meant at the time. To like when he was talking to his mother, and she heard all of it. It wasn't like she missed part of it. I like that. That's actually true. And then lack of communication. Like, she's like, "Hey, come back to the house with me," and he's like, "Nah." But then he shows up, and she's like, "What the fuck? What are you doing here?" And so the fact that it has to happen through Brimsley and Reynolds is explained later, but it's annoying that he's not communicating a lot with her.
Well, right. And I love that. I didn't point this out in the best parts. I love that Charlotte is so direct. Again, a characteristic that I share with this character. It's like, she doesn't go to somebody else to go to him. She goes to him directly and is like, fight for me. This is what I want. I'm telling you what I want. Why are you screwing around? Mm-hmm. my worst parts, of course, are Lord Danbury. The Dowager Princess, I just despise. I don't like Lady Danbury spying. I feel like that is
a
breach of
trust.
Trust that I just feel like I would like to think that's inconsistent with the character we've come to know, but I'm not sure that it is.
I don't know if it is.
I don't like any of the present day stuff. I feel like that's just blah and unnecessary. Mm-hmm. I hate the secrets. So I'm kind of with Charlotte on that. I hate the secrets that are involved here. What grade did you give this episode?
I gave it a B+. I think it's good. Sex is good.
Yeah, well, I gave it a B+ also. Again, as great as the sex is, and it is, it doesn't make up for...
There's better sex later.
Right, but, also... but it also doesn't make up for the, let's have a montage, you know, that kind of thing, because that gets kind of old.
Really quickly, my book section of this podcast, the one I wrote down for this one is that all of the feminine, and I did send a screenshot of when I was reading, I sent the screenshot to you, where apparently all of the footmen like that were lined up along like the table side for Charlotte are all named James. And it's just easier that way. And so yeah. It's from Brimsley's point of view. And he's like, you don't want to piss off a James. They're pretty athletic and they will beat you.
Cute.
It's really funny.
Cute.
And also just briefly, the whole Reynolds thing is more expanded in the book. And I'll talk more about Reynolds later. But their relationship is more expanded because you have these like point of views from Brimsley where they're meeting up and they're talking and they're trying to defend each other's like their own people and all that stuff. I mean, it's just interesting. And I think that it was there's an element of the backstory. I don't remember if they actually put in the show, but I'll figure it out in episode 4 and then I'll talk about that then. But for this episode, that's what I've got to say.
Okay. Well, I am enjoying this. And of course, what's really, really great about it is it's short. So we are going to be in the next episode that we record halfway through. So we hope that you join us, that you enjoy this whole sequence and you give us some feedback because we'd love to have feedback. And
cheers.